Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Aboujoud. On February 7th, Quebec's Court of Appeal ruled that asylum seekers are allowed access to subsidized daycare. It said that banning them from daycare is prejudicial and hinders women's participation in the job market. The province filed for a stay on the ruling until the Supreme Court of Canada hears the case. Until then, a directive from the Family Ministry declared on February 14th that asylum seekers who possess a valid work permit are qualified for subsidized daycare. If the stay is granted, the ministry warns that children of asylum seekers might not be able to attend daycare in the very short term. Quebec's Family Minister, Suzanne Roy, expressed her disapproval of the Courts of Appeal's claim that asylum seekers' inaccessibility to daycare generates discrimination based on sex. Roy stated that while Quebec remains a welcoming place, the financial and human impacts must be taken into account, and that any resident of Quebec can access childcare in the private sector where higher costs are compensated by tax breaks from the federal and provincial government. The second season of Errawabi School for Girls is finally out on Netflix. A popular show created by Jordanian director and writer Tima Shomali that explores teenage girlhood and continues to tackle unaddressed topics within Arab cinema. Season 1 was centered around the story of a teenage girl named Mariam, who is seeking revenge on her school bullies by uniting the outcasts. However, Tima does not only focus on Mariam's struggles. The series touches on taboo, stigmatized, and dismissed subjects such as sexual assault, cultural tradition, academic corruption, and difficult conversations for young girls to have. Season 2 brings new challenges to the table, more teenage angst, new students to intensify the plot, as well as a diverse soundtrack that amplifies the mood throughout each episode. It aims to chronicle the lives of young Arab girls everywhere. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Dreamscapes. Tonight, it's only myself, Natalie, and Nina. This month, if you are not aware, it's Black History Month. So Nina and I have tried to weave into our topic, you know, our show, it's about dreams and symbols. And we wanted to also bring in, you know, the Black diaspora, Black perspectives into our episode, of course. And we realized that, you know, the topic can be overwhelming. And of course, we cannot cover it all. So we're just going to talk about few important people that have influenced not only psychoanalysis, but also colonial studies and Black feminism as well. So again, like, of course, we're going to miss a lot of things. And this is just maybe a little introduction of what we intend to do and continue to bring in the future.
Yeah. We've been talking for a while and I apologize for my cat who is making noise. Hi. I don't know if you can hear him. He will continue to make noises. We've been talking and working behind the scenes on this idea and interviews and just the idea that a lot of dream theory is really white-centered, like, and really male-centered, really. And so Black History Month is a good time to address the idea of whiteness in the subconscious. And Natalie, you came up with a really great entry point to that, which is Frantz Fanon, which I think is a really great angle to take for if we want to think about, like, you know, psychoanalysis from a Black perspective. He's the first guy to go to, I think.
Yeah. So you know, I was also looking briefly a little bit of Frantz Fanon's life. So, you know, he was born in Martinique, which was a French colony. And so he was born in the early 1920s and died in the 1960s. So a lot of the literature that we have from here are from around the 1950s, just to give you a context. So that's why it's, when I was, again, you know, reading a little bit more of his text, I was just shocked how relevant they still are.
Yeah.
You know, because even if, he talks a lot also about, you know, colonization and, of course, racism. And this, sadly, are issues that are still, we're still living in a post-colonial world, in some cases, even still colonial world, if you can say, you know. So it's just, I think, so relevant still.
Thank you. Hi, you're listening to Dreamscapes on CJLO. You just heard Micaiah McRaven off of the album Universal Beings, the song Holy Lands featuring Brandi Younger. And before that, you heard Matana Roberts' Shoes of Gold off of the album Coin Coin Chapter 4, Memphis. After the ad break, we're coming back with DJ Nat and DJ Nina discussing Franz Fanon as part of Black History Month on Dreamscapes.
Cinema Politica Concordia is celebrating 20 years of screening truth to power. Join us every Monday at 7 p.m. at the Concordia Hall Building, room H110, to bridge the gap between independent filmmaking, activism, and education. Engage with filmmakers and local organizers in post-screening discussions. All screenings are by donation and open to the public. Visit our website, cinemapolitica.org, to check out our fall 2023 screening schedule.
Tune in to Mo Read Mo Radio for some amazing jams from the worlds of Latin American rhythmic music, Saturdays at 5 p.m. only on CGL. Mo Read Mo with Mr. B.
The trail had been cold for weeks, and this was my last chance to unmask the spy. But what is she taking out of her pocket? A radio? And tuned to what frequency? 1690 AM? That's CGLO in Montreal, Quebec, my favorite radio station. And then I knew. She was on to me.
I think that is interesting. I'm really glad we're going to get to talk about Franz Fanon, because I feel like we didn't get to in our program, and I asked about it and nobody had an answer why, so that's fine that we're going to get to talk about it now. But him as a psychiatrist, one of the things that I was thinking about re him and also re the bell hooks that you sent me was just, it made me think a lot about compassion focused art therapy and some of the studies that I had read. I really like that kind of therapy, because I think it because you're working with internalized shame. And so you really externalize it and have it and see it for what it is, which is this critic, this internalized critic that you've taken from society without even noticing, and then brought into your mind and into your body, and it's there. And I don't know a lot about Franz Fanon, but it makes me think about just what the little bit that I know about him, you know, how racism really is bad, obviously, but you know, he was one of the people to talk about this, how it's bad for people psychologically. Yeah. It's been able to get into your psyche and get into your body without you really noticing. And then all of a sudden it's this voice in your head that you take as just part of like who you are. And it's actually something you've internalized from society. And anyways, and I think that the idea that you've internalized this critic is really a huge part of what, I think it's a huge part of what he talks about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now we use the term, you know, like internalized racism. I think it's what you're talking about, right? And I don't think he, you know, he didn't use specifically those words, but he did talk a lot about the psychic structure of the colonial relation. You know, I had to take some notes because, you know, it's a lot of language that can feel also, you know, a bit, I really like the way he writes. And also an important note that I forgot is that some of his texts are, he mixes, like there's poetry in between, then he will come, you know, to more like a psychology perspective, then more like sociology. So it's also an interesting way of like, I guess he was also challenging this way of knowledge production and how mm-hmm. it should just be one way. So I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. I have seen it with another, I don't know what to call it. I guess not only author, because she was many things, Gloria Anzaldúa. She would also mix a lot of different ways of writing, and I think we could bring her in another episode. But yeah, as Nina, as you were saying, Fanon even had this, again, because in our, you know, show we tend to bring symbols here, and one that I think, well, that one of the of his books is called Black Skins, White Masks. So even there, we already see the symbols, you know, of the skin and of this mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so he discusses about this. He, again, I will read my notes. He says this psychological minus value. And it comes back to what you're saying of like this feeling of inferiority that has been, it's you know, I'm not trying to generalize, but in many parts of the world we see this white supremacy, you know, even in countries where we perhaps you don't have a, there's still like this widening, if I can say, you know, of like the lighter your skin is, like you, it's kind of like an association to the way he says it is like that. Even if we talk about like the how colors have been the colors of our skins, the different associations that have come with, you know, like white has been associated, even just the color itself, like to goodness, to
purity.
Like even he says this, like the we even say the white lies, and white lies are supposed to be like okay,
yeah,
as opposed to black that has been associated more with I wish I could find a word talking about this, but I think you can understand where I'm going and how this has played a significant role in how our unconscious is affected, I guess, you know, because it has been internalized so much by our society and by generations that,
yeah,
I think the really important contribution to Fanon, it's like, you know, he criticizes Freud and even Jung,
yeah,
of yes, how, you know, this our unconscious is not like ahistorical, or it's not like our context, like where we come from, the societal structures, of course, affect us in an internal way.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah. As well.
Yeah. I mean, and it, for me, it makes me think of multiple things. It makes me think when I, the, what I know about Frantz Fanon really, especially like the white mask, I'm sure, or okay, I'm not sure, but I have this feeling like there's a book that was written based off of the movie Get Out. I don't know if you saw Get Out, but I feel like when Jordan Peele wrote that movie, I'm sure he had read Frantz Fanon, and just because of how, I guess I don't want to give away what's going on in the movie, but it's a horror movie, it's about racism. It really illustrates racism in a really powerful way. And you know that I hate watching horror movies, but I watched it. I watched it during the day. I did it. And it's a great movie. Like, it really is. But it's terrifying. And there's a book that was written based off of that movie. That's this book I really like called Racism is a Form of Zoological Witchcraft. And the zoological part is the categorization of animals, the way that we rank animals from most close to human to furthest away from human, which AFCO, mm-hmm, the theorist there, really is like challenging that and saying how that really is damaging, not just for animals, but for humans. And then the witchcraft part, which is really interesting. And I'm so sorry, I have to pause for 1 second because my rabbit is chewing on something. I have a lot of animals out here today. Coco, no.
We're having a lot of issues. Yeah, go back over there. Okay.
We keep rolling. We keep rolling. Speaking of zoology. Okay. The witchcraft part is that it's almost like it's this idea of white, it's like a zombification. It's like white people going into the black body and inhabiting the black body. So in a way it's the reverse of what he's saying with the white mask, I think, but it's in the same family of ideas, right? It's like, and for me, it really relates back to that internalized racism, the internalized shame, the way that people, any marginalized person ends up taking on the shame of the oppressor, right? Like it goes inside and then you just feel like it's something that you have to carry. So anyways, that for me, that was a big association. And with the subconscious too, because we know that all of these, I always go back to this more practical metaphor for this, but like, we know that lead is really bad to drink. And we know that when people live in environments.
I lost you. Oh, here.
Okay, I'm back. Okay, sorry. Okay, well, we'll see how that.
It was my internet. I don't know.
Oh, it was your internet? No, it said my internet was, it said some internet was unstable. Sorry. Okay. Okay, maybe I'll finish the idea. I want to go back to it. The yeah. Idea is just that we know, yeah, lead is bad for people. With environmental racism, it's often marginalized people of color who are going to end up living in these areas where there's more toxins, let's just say, in the water. And then, you know, it's these people's bodies that are metabolizing the toxins. Like they're put into the place of having to take that on. And it also, you know, they've shown that like a lot of these lead interferes with the way people process. I'm going to stop in a second because of the cat. Interferes with the way people mentally process things. And it can make people have worse mental health, just the physical properties of the lead as a physical thing. But then we can also imagine that for like how people metabolize things psychologically as well, right? Like, of course, it weighs heavier on people. Like if they're being forced to metabolize these the environmental toxins of like racism, like in society.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying speaks to how, again, is like this bigger systems of oppression that at the end affect us like at an internal and personal level as well. So I you know, I was also thinking, okay, so how do we weave this into like the dream world? Because that's what we, you know, our show is about dreams, but then of course a lot of dream theory has predominantly still being influenced, you know, by, you know, maybe not so much as Freud anymore, but I would say Jung at least. And I know that, you know, Jung was talking about the collective unconscious. But then, you know, I was thinking, okay, but how do we make sense of our dreams also being influenced by society? And again, that's when I found a chapter in Fanon's this book. Its title, I think it's The Wretch of the World.
That's one of his last books, before he died.
Yeah. So he actually talks about some of his he describes one of his clients' dreams.
Amazing. Ooh, okay, we should read it.
So wait, I summarize, I underline it here. Okay, so
the client says, you know, tells him the dream. Oh, sorry, yeah, you go.
Yeah, so I'm gonna, or you can help me read it actually, so it doesn't, it's sure. Not only, you can read from where it says the quotations.
Yeah, so his client is telling him his dream. I had been walking for a long time. I was extremely exhausted. I had the impression that something was waiting for me, I climbed barricades and walls. I came into an empty hall, and from behind a door, I heard a noise. I hesitated before I went in, but finally I made up my mind and opened the door. In this second room, there were white men, and I found that I too was white. And then Franz Fanon says, when I try to understand this dream and to analyze it, knowing that my friend has had problems in his career, I conclude that this dream fulfills an unconscious wish. But when outside my psychoanalytic office, I have to incorporate my conclusions in the context of the world, and then he asserts a bunch of things underneath that. I don't know if we want to do those. Do you want me to say some of those?
Yeah, you can summarize it because it relates to what we're saying. But then I just thought it's interesting we have like from the dream.
Oh, yeah. No, this is perfect. Yeah. So one of the things he asserts, like I guess from a non-psychoanalytic space, although anyways, maybe this still relates. My patient is suffering from an inferiority complex. His psychic structure is in danger of disintegration. What has to be done is to save him from this little by little, to rid him of this unconscious desire. Yeah, it's that internalized. And then two, if he is overwhelmed by such a degree by the wish to be white, it is because he lives in a society that makes his inferiority complex possible, in a society that derives its stability from this perpetuation of this complex, in a society that proclaims the superiority of one race. To the identical degree to which that society creates difficulties for him, he will find himself thrust into a neurotic situation. Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to read that part too?
Yeah, I can finish.
You do it. Yeah.
So Fanon concludes with, what emerges then is the need for combined action on the individual and on the group. As a psychoanalyst, I should help my patient to become conscious of his unconscious and abandon his attempts at a hallucinatory widening, but also to act in the direction of a change in the social structure. So I found that interesting because that's what he contributes, unlike just Freud, of like, yes, you becoming aware of your unconscious, but then that's not enough when you know that the social structures play a significant role of why he's having this, right?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of, should we read this part too? It, for me, it plays into like the idea of oppressive therapies too, right? Like the way that like you're trained in clinical therapy to not share anything about yourself, but then when you're going from a more anti-oppressive stance, you know, like the therapists who like show up in their sweatpants and like maybe share a little bit about themselves, like, and give context, like it's shifted, I think, like how the real world is allowed to come into the space, you know what I mean, as opposed to in clinical, like with Freud, really like we're staying in this, in just this tiny space, and it doesn't go back out, you know? So,
So I can just finish reading this little paragraph.
Yeah.
So he summarizes. So in other words, the black man should no longer be confronted by the dilemma, turn white or disappear, but he should be able to take cognizance of a possibility of existence. In still other words, if society makes difficulties for him because of his color, even his dreams, I establish the expression of an unconscious desire to change color, my objective will not be that of dissuading him from it by advising him to keep his place. On the contrary, my objective, once his motivations have been brought into consciousness, will be to put him in a position to choose action or passivity with respect to the real source of the conflict, that is, towards the social structures, as we have talked.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's like this argument that like people always make that I think is totally valid, that it's like, do people need, I mean, anyways, people can have therapy, it's fine, but like, do people always need therapy, or do they need like, you know, like housing security and food security and like the access to like transportation, that is, you know, like do they need their like basic needs met, or do they need therapy, right? And I think you can ask for both. I think if you're having your basic needs met, you know, but I do think that it is a strange time that we're living in where, you know, sometimes people end up in therapy because the world is like such a hard place, right? And it's things mm-hmm. that like are hard to change. Yeah.
So of course, when the social structures or systems of oppression, as we said before, are like directly impacting us individually, even to a point of like our unconscious. It is so important to take that into account as well, right? Like we cannot erase that. And Fanon goes on to give an example of six other dreams that I guess we shouldn't read all of them because it's a bit long.
I can do it another time.
But it is interesting that he just says, you know, that I think it was another psychiatrist, I guess, or psychologist, Mr. Manoni, he quotes, but he says he analyzes seven dreams, so seven narratives that open the unconscious to us. And in summary, in the six of them, we find a dominant theme of terror. So, you know, this six children and one adult tell their dreams. And he says, we see them trembling, seeking flight, and unhappy. And then he describes, you know, in little summaries, the six dreams. And it's just all it's all again to summarize how, you know, this white supremacy impacted the unconscious of like in this six dreams, we can see, you know, that this common thread or common theme. So then he goes on to criticize again Freud, like how in Freud's perspective he will have analyzed the dreams through his lens, you know.
Yeah.
So I found it interesting, like
yeah, well, you know, every yeah.
So I'll just finish with this last quote and then, I guess I don't have to read it. But
yeah, well, can we summarize it?
Well, I find interesting that he says to speak of society's dreams, you know, because that just got me thinking of how it's not only, of course, each dream that we have, it's like, it speaks over our individuality, right? They're so unique.
Yeah.
But then what about also as a collective, like our collective, like society's dreams he's talking about. So I don't know. It's just like food for thought, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like we had also discussed maybe, you know, talking Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, but I did feel, I mean, I think that that's something we can talk about, but I felt like I really wanted to sit with that for a long time because there's a comedian, Harry Kondabolu, who sort of makes like a joke, you know, that, you know, when white people hear people talking about Martin Luther King, they're like, oh, I have dreams too. And like, we're a show about dreams. So I don't want it to be a thing where we're relating, you know, people's sleeping dreams to like something as important as Martin Luther King's speech. But I do think I do think it's like really important that his texts are still, or like it's really notable that his texts are still really relevant. I know they're really relevant like on a lot of levels right now. I'm sorry my cat is joining. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, of course, there's the big critique to Fanon, and he even recognizes, you know, he doesn't have a gender perspective.
Yeah.
You know, he, in one of the chapters of his book, he does talk about Black women, but in relation to white men. But is there still, it's kind of like, well, and again, you know, he was writing in 1950s. So then the other person that I thought was relevant to bring in is Bell Hooks.
Yeah, and can we...
Passed away, I think, just last year.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yep. Maybe so that we can also gather our thoughts.
Yeah. Well, just also just because like we were saying before, it's like, yeah, we were going to talk about intersectionality, but like,
yeah,
it's normal that it takes a long time to get to these places, right? Like this is a really, it's really complex. So it makes sense that it just takes a while to get into things. Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. I wanted to bring bell hooks because then we can weave into intersectionality. And she also speaks from another symbol I remember I had this PowerPoint that I did once for one class, so I can share it with you. So she talks about the gaze, right, and how and through cinema, so it's the oppositional gaze.
Yeah.
So we can talk about this one. We can record about this later, and maybe Jade can join us for this if she wants, or we can just continue.
I think it's great. Thanks. Thank you for leading the discussion. Yeah.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
You want some hip-hop, you want some R&B? Tune into the Limelight, 6 to 8 every Saturdays, right here on CJLO 1690 on your AM dial. That's what's up.
You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
Hi, you're listening to Dreamscapes with a new co-host who loves to meow. You just heard a discussion between DJ Nat and DJ Nina about Franz Fanon. You also heard the song Prosperity Sphere featuring Junius Paul, which is by Micaiah McCraven off of the album Universal Beings. We're going to do a moon report. And then we're going to play Shabazz Palaces, an echo from the hosts that profess infinitum, which, I was going to say what that instrument was that they use on that song, but I'm forgetting what it's called. A maroon? I don't remember. I'm sorry. But it has a great use of a cool sound. Oh, my God. Should I re-record this? I'm not going to re-record it. Right, Bear? I already started talking. Do you have anything else to add? No, now you're done meowing. Okay. We're going to continue that discussion. We didn't get to go fully into bell hooks. It just takes a lot of time to get through these ideas, and we'll keep coming back to them. And they're very relevant to our subconscious, right? We, like as Nat was saying, our subconscious isn't created, like it isn't ahistorical. Like everything that we learn and that we absorb goes into our subconscious. So it's interesting to get perspectives that aren't from Freud or from Jung to help nuance how we think about it and broaden our understanding. Hi, you're listening to Dreamscapes. And this is a moon report. You're going to be listening to this episode on February 27th. But yes, there was a full moon on February 24th at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. People are like, why are people talking about the moon at 7:30 a.m. in the morning? We can't see it here. Well, you know, the moon does what it wants, and also it doesn't obey the rules of like time zones, so it's like 100% pure moon at 7:30 a.m. today, but it is kind of full still, like yesterday night if it hadn't been cloudy, and tonight if it's not cloudy it will still be full. We on Dreamscapes, we are like pro calling the moon full if it looks full, and that means it doesn't have to be at exactly 100% illumination. It can be at other percents as well. Like 98 is still full. So there is a full moon today on the 24th. If you had any feelings about that, you can let us know. It's also very cold today, which is good. It's good in the winter when it's cold. We like that. Why? Because things need to be cold in the winter in Montreal. That's how it's supposed to work. The trees have to sleep. The animals can't get confused about if it's, you know, springtime or not. They need to have like a long hibernation and then, you know, wake up and get ready for the springtime activities. So that's my report for right now. Back to the regularly scheduled program. Oh, my last note is I totally jinxed my moon friend and I have not seen her since I made that last report. I knew it. When you have moon friends, you have to keep them to yourself. Don't share them with anyone. You don't talk about them. That's what I learned. But also maybe she went somewhere warm for the rest of the winter and she's going to come back and we're going to still be friends. It might all be okay. February is hard, you guys. February is, I always feel, the hardest month. No matter what is going on, it just always feels difficult. So just like know that it's the hardest month. Don't make any major life decisions in the hardest month of the year. And just like be kind to yourself and others. I don't want to make, no, don't, I mean, do that. I mean, obviously do that. But like, I don't want to be like, whatever kind of a show this could be if I started talking like that all the time. But yeah, just know like February is like, you know that saying like don't make major life decisions after 9 p.m. or whatever? February is just all after 9 p.m. It is just an all after 9 p.m. situation. So just treat it as such and try to enjoy disassociating in adaptive ways. I don't know. We'll get into it next time. We're going to do a show about Hillman on March 5th. We're going to have a pre-recorded show on March 12th. And we're going to come back on March 19th with the year in review. Should we have done that in January? Maybe. But you can do it anytime. So we'll get into it, all these ideas then. Pinups in the shade of promise.
Made too cold. Wow. What is truth? Shots at all these soft niggas, huh? Ideas in decline. Rise of the laws. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hey, here we stand. Slave to networks, master plans. Swags the brand, open a can. Chains off still, yeah, I never ran. I brag, I boast, I kill, I coast. I toast to cake and crime. Doing the most, a stronger dose. A king at leisure time. So your grace of mine. Dope is lace, fantasticized. Gang signs poised to hang them high. Swing, oh yeah, that's my guy. The forecast heat with chance to blast. Hustle though, sure don't seem fast. My kiss, my list, my dreams, my stats. Certain things need not be asked. Thank you.
selfish, exist only to wish on stars. Lay in wait and cut the bars down, then go ice the guards. Touch the hood and go kiss granny, catch a box of food. Play the blade and feel that sunlight till you're in the mood. But who do you think you are? 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 Who do you think who you are?
Montreal has a rich cultural history of live music dating back centuries, from the traditional folk and jazz of the early 20th century to the vibrant hip-hop, indie rock, and metal scenes of today. This legacy was not just paved by the great artists gracing the stage, but also by the legendary venues that have hosted and uplifted music scenes in Montreal through the decades. Did you know that Canada's first black-owned nightclub was founded here in the 1930s? Rockhead's Paradise was a jazz bar owned and operated by Rufus Rockhead, a Jamaican who immigrated to Canada originally in the late 1910s with the dream of opening his own nightclub and dance hall. The venue originally opened in 1927 as a diner and a hotel in the Saint-Antoine district of Little Burgundy. However, in the early 1930s, Rufus's dream began to become reality as Rockhead's Paradise became the epicenter of Canadian jazz, attracting popular American artists during the Prohibition era by serving beer and wine. However, Rufus faced systemic racism from both the Montreal and Quebec government while trying to become licensed to serve hard liquor, neither of whom wished to grant a license to a black person trying to own a bar. Despite the 5-year fight to obtain a full liquor license, Rufus persevered and Rockhead's Paradise rebranded as a jazz cocktail lounge in 1935. The club became a fixture not only in Montreal's music scene, but also functioned as a safe haven for black Americans and Canadians in a time of intense prejudice. Jazz legends like Nina Simone, Louis Armstrong, Billie Holiday, and Ella Fitzgerald frequented the venue when they came to Montreal and also nurtured Canadian talents like Oscar Peterson. This success continued until the early 1950s when the club closed down for nearly a decade. When Rockhead's Paradise reopened in the 1960s, jazz had greatly waned in popularity, and the previously bustling cultural hub of Saint-Antoine had begun to decay due in part to the industrialization and displacement of the borough's working-class population. Unfortunately, aside from the brief resurgence in popularity in the following decades under new ownership, and in opening up beyond jazz to other genres like R&B, soul, and funk, financial issues forced the building to close down permanently in the late 1980s. The legacy of Rockhead's Paradise lives on through Montreal's jazz scene to this day as an important part of Black Canadian history. Rufus Rockhead passed away in 1981 and was honored in 1989 with a street named after him in Little Burgundy. Rockhead's Paradise left a lasting mark on the city's jazz legacy, providing a platform for emerging Black artists who lacked other opportunities to showcase their music and making Montreal a cultural hotspot in the scene. CJLO 1690 AM, celebrating Montreal's historic venues and vibrant musical legacy.